Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hello, everyone. This is Nicole Powell, a host on New Books in African American Studies, a channel on the New Books Network. And I'm really honored to be here today sharing virtual space with Dr. Philip Butler and to discuss his newest work, Black Transhuman Liberation Theology. So Dr. Philip Butler is currently the term assistant professor of theology and Black Posthuman Artificial Intelligence Systems at ILIF School of Theology, and he's also the founder of the Seeker Project, a distinctly Black conversational artificial intelligence with mental health capacities. His work primarily focuses on the intersection of neuroscience, technology, spirituality, and race, and currently he is working to construct a Black post-humanism that is both critical and speculative in nature, and he's also building a distinctly Black artificial intelligence interface combining machine learning and psychotherapeutic systems. Dr. Butler has an undergraduate degree in religious studies from Morehouse College, a master's in divinity from Emory University, and Dr. Butler did his doctoral work at the Claremont School of Theology, and he is currently working at the ILIF Artificial Intelligence Institute. Thank you, Dr. Butler, for joining me.
Thank you, Nicole, for having me. This is an honor and a pleasure.
Yeah, of course. So just to start off, could you tell us a little bit about how you came to write Black Transhuman Liberation Theology?
No, that's a really good question. So this is actually my dissertation. And so when I was in my coursework and even working during my qualifying exams, I was doing my PhD work during the time of, Trayvon Martin, Sandra Bland, Mike Brown. So I'm sitting here trying to figure out, how to do a theology that speaks to the future of Blackness and Black people, right? And is one that is particularly disruptive. Because I initially went into Claremont School of Theology to do neuroscience and spirituality. But as Professor Najib Said says, you have to do the work for the people that claim you. And at these pivotal moments, I had to really, really rethink the way in which my work was going to be for those folks who I love dearly in the communities that I come from and hope to really do the work on behalf of alongside with as well.
And in this current moment where we see the prevalence of white supremacist violence towards Black folks, how does Black transhumanism speak to that or serve as resistance to that violence?
Right. So when I started out with neuroscience and spirituality at the beginning, and then when I start thinking about the future of Blackness, so I start thinking about technology, right? And so all of this started to come together. But kind of at this pivotal moment, we look at transhumanism really as in a really basic definition, transhumanism is any use of technology to augment human intellectual, psychological, or physical capacities. And so we could argue on a very basic level that Black folks have been transhuman, right? In the way in which they write, they've been writers, the way Black folks have been architects and constructors. And so technology just doesn't have to be seen as, like the extension of like smartphones or artificial intelligence, things like that. And so even more so in this particular moment, it's an acceptance of the way in which technology is not going anywhere, but even more so becoming progenitors of technology in ways that really allow for us to kind of be leaders in these industries, but also create systems technologically situated systems that work towards kind of materializing kind of these liberating realities that shift power dynamics and work against and work to dismantle, disrupt, right, and really, really destroy, right, white supremacy in all of its many facets.
And since Black transhuman liberation theology proposes that technology is key to like Black liberation and Black revolution, what does that mean for like the discourse around tech equity and access? And if we're augmenting our humanity in order to preserve our human bodies and to, you know, live and engage in this reality, how do we make tech access more equitable, or how does tech equity like fit into that conversation?
Right. So I think that's a good question, right? In terms of like I hear like three questions about like humanity, tech access, right, and liberation. And I think the first question, and this is part of the reason why I highlight this like this transhuman, like so within trans, this transhuman space, this Black transhumanism that I was working on, is really calling into question humanity as like a liberative marker, right? So like we've seen that within civil rights movements and even just like other theological discourses, like there's always been this kind of push towards the work towards accepting Black humanity or seeing Black humanity as valid, right, and giving credence to the humanity of Black folks. And so one of the things that I'm calling into question is whether or not humanity is something that's actually serving us well.
Right.
Mainly because if humanity is meant to give us a certain level of protection, but it doesn't, then the question becomes like, why use this linguistic technology, right? Because, you know, our words become our own form of technology in a way in which we understand ourselves in a way we situate our mindsets and our behavior frameworks, so on and so forth. But if we understand ourselves as human, the human is meant to give us a protection, but it doesn't, then why buy into the supposed, you know, benefits of humanity when humanity is not something that really is something that's an extension of us, right? And it's not to say that Black folks aren't worthy, right? And given worth, dignity, and respect. But I think the important thing to remember here is that white folks aren't human either, right? Humanity, as we understand it today in our current society, is an extension of white supremacist, enlightenment-based humanism, which pretty much created a human, which is white and male, and decided everything else was to be, you know, ordered in response to that construction. And so, but if you look at the qualities of this human, this kind of detached, observer, right, this kind of spirit or this mind, but that is detached from a body, so to speak, this objective observer, right, then white folks ain't human either, mainly because, right, this idea of objectivity doesn't exist, mainly because every time somebody tries to assert any form of observation or even analysis, their perspective, their histories, their location is just all the way through it. And so if the white folks aren't human and humanity isn't serving Black folks, then we should really seriously consider another type of nomenclature, right? And that's part of the reason why transhuman is like a place marker. Mm-hmm. And so when we start kind of moving forward to look into the ways in which we start talking about tech access and things like that, I think that before we look at tech access, we got to look at the ways in which our bodies function as its own form of technology, right? And so that in itself is particularly important, mainly because if we can see our bodies as technology, then the extension of our bodies or the augmentation of our bodies, right, or just the enhancement of the things around us become a bit more palatable, a bit more commonsensical, even if you will, because it's an extension of us. And it's not to reduce Blackness, right, to this kind of mechanistic or even kind of basic biological sense. It's just a recognition that like Blackness represents kind of almost as Angela Hilly would say, right, this kind of this potential, right, and this kind of this open-endedness, right? So in this transhumanist space, Blackness is open, it's potential, it's infinite in its capacities. And then moving into like questions about equity, I think equity is fine and dandy, but I think it still places Blackness in response to white supremacy, right? It's like, oh, you guys have this. And so please include us, right? Please make it equitable for us, which still sounds like asking, right? Right. And if we're talking about Blackness in terms of how Sherman Jackson looks at kind of Black religion as this as this particular disposition that is always working to disrupt and dismantle white supremacy, then we really can't ask for equity anymore. And this is why, you know, in terms of like the technological space, I'm suggesting that Black folks ought to become the progenitors of it, right? And this becomes tricky mainly because then where's the money going to come from to fund a lot of these, these endeavors? And so that in itself is something I think that needs to be, the economics of it needs to be reconsidered. I'm thinking about this in some of my current work in terms of like data labor and universal basic income. But needless to say, the idea is that equity becomes a question of the past, mainly because we're working to create our own systems that have the same, if not that are actually more powerful, right? Because the whole point of it is to disrupt top power. And so we can't really work to just compete to be at the same level. This has to be a legitimate competitive race whereby folks are, you know, looking to outdo one another and recalibrate as well as disrupt current, you know, power structural, you know, paradigms and realities. So I hope I'm answering your question.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think when you were talking a little bit about how humanity is a term that we haven't really had full access to, or Black folks haven't really had full access to, or haven't had like the full protections and responsibilities and like quotation marks rights that humanity provides different beings. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminded me of The Promise of Patriarchy by Eula Taylor, and how even though like she's using women in Nation of Islam as a case study to describe how like patriarchy, like Black women have never had access to the same protections of womanhood, yet like mm-hmm. we still cling or like want that, we still want that term woman because like we want the protections or like the different things that come with womanhood despite like it existing under like patriarchal violence. And so I think it's interesting because like Black folks still do want, like we want the title human, even though that title is like, or that term is like violence ridden. So I'm just thinking about like what challenges would come from trying to get people to detach themselves from humanity or to see like the violence behind that term. Like, or is that, it's going to be challenging to like encourage people to say like, we shouldn't use this term anymore. So like, what challenges can you see arising from that?
No, I think at least I think there's a plethora of challenges. I think at least from a theological perspective, right? Humans have a particular relationship with God, or at least the divine figure, right? And then you could look at this in terms of a lot of different like major religions where there is a deity, right? If you go to, you know, the Adam and Eve story, just as an example, right? Humans supposedly, or man, right? Using the language of the text was created kind of once towards the end, but then given authority, but then also made in the image and likeness of God and God's self. And so the question becomes, if we're not human anymore, then where do we see ourselves in this kind of, you know, kind of chain of being, so to speak, right? If we remove ourselves from this kind of a 7-day creation story, so to speak, right? Where do we fit? Are there other kind of cosmogenic myths that we can find ourselves to be a part of? But then within a predominantly like a still largely kind of Christian, or at least Christian based like nation, and even like Black communities are still, you know, majority Christian in many ways, you're asking Black folks to remove themselves, right, from the very things that give them an identity, so to speak, right? And so this becomes like a really, really big challenge. And so I think it's kind of what I was moving to in terms of like Black vitality, right? It has more this kind of African centered kind of spirituality in this framework, right? And where even questions the necessity of a soul, right? Because vitality is flowing through the body in such a way that not only gives life to it, but everything around it. And so like this becomes like the, you know, the source for everything. But that's the main challenge, like asking folks to relinquish their current relationship with God for a different one, right? And you could argue that the lack of like direct and even concrete answers, well, by talking about concrete when we're talking about religion, is interesting altogether. But the whole idea is that folks are invested in this particular structure, and you're asking them to remove themselves to the uncertainty of something else that could potentially and seemingly has the capacity to do something different in terms of how they identify the power that they feel like they can assert in the natural world or in relationship, in spiritual relationships, so on and so forth. But I think, again, like theologically, that's the main question you're asking people to detach, even divorce themselves from, like, the very things that they've come to define themselves against, like, you know, for several centuries.
Yeah. And I think another aspect of transhumanism that was interesting to me is that it's a biocultural orientation, but it also makes political positions. So it takes stances. So, for example, you define Black transhumanism as advocating for technology which emerges alongside and in conjunction with the body. So would someone who does not align themselves with that still be considered a Black transhumanist?
So this becomes like a sticky and maybe even a tricky thing, because you may not say you align with it, but I ask you that the person who has this kind of pushback, I gotta ask, like, then what about your life isn't technological? Like, what about what you engage in is not an extension of you and not you, right? Even if you just look at your body by itself, you know, if you're listening to this, you have a podcast kind of app, and then there's an app that's attached to a larger, kind of hardware device, right? Then that device is connected somewhere, whether it be through like internet or, through cellular data, so on and so forth, right? It's like, what about what you're doing is not technological? Even if you're like, I'm a paper and pen person, cool.
Right.
You're not using your fingernails to etch into the paper, mm-hmm. And even if you are, like, that's that technology that you're using. And so, like, I think it's just really trying to get people to reframe the way in which they understand, like, their own existence, right? Because if we are the progenitors of technology, right, then what you're actually suggesting is that life itself has way more potential than the things being hard and fast and fixed. Technology is not a fixed thing. It's an ever-evolving, and now I think I kind of use the word co-evolving along with us. And so if technology is co-evolving, then it co-evolves along with the imaginations of the person or people, right, who are wielding it or who are in relationship with it. And so if somebody's suggesting that they're not, that they don't see themselves in this way, then I just kind of raise that question, like, in what ways are you not technologically situated already?
Right. And I think it helps us to redefine, like, how we see technology or what technology is, because I'm sure a lot of folks probably wouldn't consider pen and paper technology, but it's something outside of our bodies that we're using to augment our abilities. So, another question I had was, I think when readers who, especially who are familiar with Black liberation theology, who read this, they're definitely going to see or read the cover, at least, or the title, and be like, Black transhuman liberation theology. That sounds like Black liberation theology. So I think what conversations or what disciplines inform Black transhuman liberation theology, and what sort of thought leaders inform like the principles of this, of Black transhuman liberation theology?
No, I think that's fair. So I think this is a kind of a constructive work where I piece a lot of things together to make this, right? And so I do this with a lot of folks in mind, but I think so we'll start with the disciplines. So what disciplines inform this, right? We have kind of science and technology studies. We're also looking at kind of neuroscience, whether it be a little bit of cognitive science as well. Some physiological studies are in there. And then primarily kind of at the base of it, right, is spirituality studies, right? And so we're looking at this combination of neuroscience, spirituality studies, Black theology, right? And even transhumanist theory, but I say that, And I'll let you on a little secret, Nicole. Right. So this, I wrote this with Black posthumanism in mind. If you look at the introduction, right, Black transhumanism rests on the tenets of Black posthumanism, and so a lot of this is still kind of intertwined with like posthumanism and process thought, right? Where you see like Alfred North Whitehead and Monica Coleman, folks like that. And so in terms of like thought leaders and things like that, you have those folks. And we looked at some French Fanon in there. He's definitely a big piece. In terms of the science technology studies, I drew heavily from Barbara Holmes, right? And even kind of expanding on what she did initially with Joy Unspeakable, to include Akasha Hall and Angel Williams and just a lot more other kind of Black spiritual practitioners, right? To mix the neuroscientific, the neurophysiological, right? With that, so we also, in terms of neurophysiological stuff, we did some Andrew Newberg, our religious experiences, some Ann Tate. So it's really just an amalgamative kind of move here to really kind of construct what it means to rethink our existence this way.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
And I think you were saying that Black transhumanism is like the channel or the means by which we access Black posthumanism. So how does Black posthumanism align with Black liberation, and are the two interchangeable?
Right. So this kind of goes back to, at least in the beginning, right, we talked about like transhumanism being a place marker for how we feel like for what we are right now, right? And so even like a post humanism is this kind of this finally kind of just like saying like, yo, just put this human thing to bed. And even put a lot of like the constraints of religiosity or religion to bed as well. And not necessarily, but I don't want to get it wrong. It doesn't have to be atheistic. At the same time, it's just Black posthumanism. It's just it's an acceptance, right, of like the chaos and the uncertainty, right, and the willingness to trudge through that and but at the same time take these things into account, right. And so while I think that Black transhumanism becomes a way to think alongside Black posthumanism, Black posthumanism becomes a foundation, mainly because like if chaos and uncertainty become a basic part of everyday life, then an acceptance of it allows people to move in ways that are that at least I think, right, and that are ways that give folks the opportunity to actually take more control over their situations, and it gives them the responsibility and the onus, right, to move towards the type of freedom or liberation that they desire in their hearts.
And is this something that we all should be striving towards? Like disavowing our humanity, is this something that is across the board for Black folks? Should white folks be disavowing their humanity? Should other people of color be disavowing their humanity? Or is this something? Yeah. That, yeah. Yeah.
No, no, that's not, no, yeah, no, yeah, definitely. I mean, like if I had to, you know what I'm saying, put together, you know, like a like a PSA, you know, it's mainly like, yo, humanity is a facade, right? Like and everything is myth. And so like if you like the beginning of the last chapter of this book, we looked at a little bit of like power and like these kind of these meta ontological frameworks. It came back to the concrete was like with a little bit of Nipsey Hussle, like, you know, disrespectful and arrogant, who's going to stop us? Meaning that in some ways, you got to do whatever you got to do to be like, to be the fullest of what it means to be yourself. And this becomes like, and so one thing I didn't mention, right, was also this decolonial framework that kind of undergirds all of this, right? It's like, if whoever you are is going to be outside of whatever binary, white supremacist, heteronormative framework that already exists. Like, you're not going to fit in there. There's no way, right? And so whoever you're going to be disrespectful as you can be to this white supremacist framework to kind of present yourself in a way that not only puts cracks in it, but does not allow for it to maintain itself, right? And so this also comes from from being willing to really, you know, kind of undo the very things that we've wanted to lean on, right? Which a lot of, in many cases, stems from the human, right? And the way in which we see ourselves in relationship to it, or at least being it, but moving on to something else.
Right. It's literally like, in the words of Fred Moden, refusing what has been refused to us. So since humanity has been refused, like the concept of humanity being refused to Black folks, we're saying this concept is not something we should align with anyways.
Yeah. We should not. And I think it's just it's definitely that kind of like intentional and persistent refusal, right, to participate. Definitely.
And then could you define the 9 principles that undergird Black post-humanism, or at least some of them, a little bit for readers who or listeners who are not as familiar with post-humanist thought?
Sure. Let me see off the top of my head, right?
Or we can just, I know, right? I'm sorry. Or we can just, just the main tenets, the core tenets that undergird this, the principles, not right, so, like, okay. Oh, this is a quiz.
Right. Kind of a little bit, right? But also, so I think the main ones, right, nonlinearity. I think is one of the main ones, right? Everything, like while things happen in a certain way, right? That the framework, that even that you perceive things, it's not something that is kind of like this system that is a domino effect. Things are converging, dissecting, intersecting, right? Overlapping. Things are even circular, right? Things are vertical, right? We can't really rely on linearity to provide us some sense of security anymore, right? So nonlinearity, the process of change, right? I think that is something to always remember, right? In terms of like nothing will ever be the same, even, you know, like we look at it kind of on a physiological level, right? Every moment that we exist, right, our bodies are responding to certain things, which means that we have different physiological activities that occur, which means that we're definitely not going to be the same, right? And so I think the third one, and maybe I'll do one more, is that, right, complex knowledge is important, which also leads back to this nonlinearity. Relativity, right, is not unsubstantial, right? It's everything, right? And what I mean by this, right, you could think of it in terms of Einstein, but even more so, like the relativity has more to do with the individual subject or the individual perceiver, and each individual's perspective is definitely something to be validated, right? But also to be something that is to be deconstructed. Like nothing ought to be able to stand, right? It's kind of puts us in a place where we have to remember that like everything is nothing all at the same time. And like you could say that this is whimsical and a bit far fetched, but like on some level, if you continue to break it down, you recognize that there's in many ways particles that just kind of exist, and these things all exist together. But the configuration, right? So I think one of the things that I like to highlight is like the difference between like form, and by that I mean, right? Like, so for instance, you may have an animal, say like a dog, right? Or a person, and historically there's always been like this, going back to this chain of being we talked about before, right? Humans or persons are somehow better than dogs, But I think we recognize, right, that you have human biology, you have human physiology, and dog biology, dog physiology. And I think that the betterness always boils down to consciousness, right? And I think the argument has always been that, like, humans are better because humans make stuff, or that humans can see themselves and recognize themselves. But all of these things we have to ask, you know, and in what ways has the dog not been doing this, right? And in what ways can we really see that the dog doesn't know that the dog is the dog has a self? Or is the dog even in a kind of a Buddhist framework better than us? Because the dog maybe if the dog can't recognize itself, is it better because it recognizes that it has no self, right? But the whole point is that we can't perceive anything from anybody else's perspective, and so this relativity becomes integral mainly because it gives others the opportunity to really really ground themselves in their own histories and location and bodies. While at the same time parsing apart what it means for them to be in that way. And so nothing's static, everything's changing. And I think the last one, I'll highlight is this, right? Non-determinism, right, does not negate supernature, right? That is this idea that just because uncertainty, disorder, and chaos is there, that doesn't mean that there aren't like forces that are larger than us in terms of, like, and this is why I was talking earlier to, like, this atheistic or not, like, just because this disorder and chaos, there still could be deities out there. There still are, as we know in terms of physics, right, and science, there still are immaterial objects that exist and have real impact on physical objects that exist. And so it's just a matter of recognizing that we don't know as much as we think we do, but an openness, right, to explore. In a very real way.
I have another praxis question. So
okay, bring us back down from there, right?
So, given Black transhumanism's emphasis on augmenting, like, both spiritual and physical abilities, how can we look at Black transhumanist theology through a disability justice lens?
No, I think that's totally fair. And I think this is where, like, the relativity piece comes in, right? Like, it's there is the ability to augment oneself without creating a new normative framework, right? And meaning that this does not necessarily suggest that everyone ought to do this, or that everyone wants to do this, or that everyone is required to do this. I think that this gives folks from differently abled perspectives the very same level of agency to do this or not, right, in function in whichever technological apparatus or not that they want to be in relationship with. And so it's just a matter of, no matter which type of ability one has, it's just a matter of selecting and choosing and then being and then living with the type of technologies that one wants to be in relationship with. So by no means is this attempting to create a new normative physical, intellectual, or any kind of abled framework, right? This has to do with agency, right, and being oneself in this transhumanist space.
That's beautiful how inclusive it is, and how it works for every, out of lack for a better word, every being, every human person. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, all I was just about to say is just that I think it's imperative, right, to maintain, like, the space of openness, right? Because if we look at transhumanist roots are meant to be eugenic in nature. They're meant to be pushing towards a particular type of normalcy, right? A particular type of, like, super white guy, right? Who's a master of all of the elements, so to speak, and you could argue, right, where some folks would say that, like, Nietzsche is a part of this art this in terms of, like, the overman, right, and which in his regard, it's not entirely, like, technologically advanced. It's more of a spiritual advancement in many ways, but it doesn't always bring itself out there depending upon the modern transhumanist part that it's engaged in. Like, so especially, like, if it's, look at the political movements of transhumanism versus the philosophical movements, they're always kind of after this type of post-human, but a transhumanist post-human is one that creates kind of a new norm, and its experiences are so far vastly different from us because of the enhancements that it has. Like if picking up a car is like picking up your textbook for them, then you know the world is perceptively right and even kind of sensibly different. And so but again, if that's the kind of norm people are after, then that does not allow for everybody to make it into this future.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. Even like
you had a question.
When I was reading the work, just like the human term, like how contested it is, and how like human is, even though like white folks are not at the, they don't align themselves or they don't embody like that term, but that human is so interchangeable with like white man, with literally what you said, like super white guy. It's just like interchangeable, and that's exactly why it's like not an inclusive term.
Nah, not at all, right? I think it's meant to be perceived as one. And I think this, you know, where like Victor Anderson would talk about like the limits of liberalism, right? Where it's, you know, we're accepting you, but only you mm-hmm. that look like this, or even Kelly Brown Douglas, like with it. It would trip me out when she would talk about like the civil pamphlets, where folks during the Great Migration would literally get off the train and be handed a pamphlet of like, this is how we act up here, this is how we this is how we function. Which again, right, if you look at the connect, like, you know, like we have civil pamphlets and then we have civil rights, and then we have like black folks who even to the day when folks talk about like for Cardi B for example, of like the type of woman she is, right? That does not get included, or Megan Thee Stallion. These women don't deserve the same level of respect because right. they don't always exist right within this type of civil code, and so it's still like there's still always going to be gradients of man or human, and then like those who exist outside of
right. Yes, I think it is important to uplift those gradients, and like what you were saying about Meg Thee Stallion, just how. She is like being so unprotected because she doesn't align with like what the protections of womanhood or just how people perceive like what a woman should be or how should act or dress. And because of that, like she doesn't benefit from all the full protections of womanhood. And so many, like most black women don't, all black women don't access those. So, yeah.
That's no, so she's like, you know, this Victorian womanhood that gets lifted up, right? That you're talking about, right? Is anything outside of that? And that's why I think, Transnecropolitics, I think by Riley Snorton talks about like these heteronormative binaries, right? The heteronormative man in their binaries, and then like this. The way in which like black women are not only not men, they're not women. And so there are at least like 3 degrees away from it. And then you add like, you have black culture, and then you have like, you know, so to me, this becomes like just more evidence as to why like we can't depend on this word, because it never like ever was meant for us.
Right. And I think also it's beautiful that like, you're making us aware of this gradient, but then you're also like transhumanism is a way for us to transcend the human. So there's a solution that's present in the text too. So it's not just like we're aware of this gradient and we're aware of our position in the gradient, and like it's all so overwhelming and so sad, but there's something that we can align towards and strive towards, and that's transhumanism. So it's definitely a great contribution.
No, thank you. I didn't even think about this like it as being transcendent. I thought of it more like as in a transient. So no, I like that, you know, transcending humanism. But in terms of like when you talk about this kind of solution, or like not just sad, it just made me think about like this. Like I think that's what kind of something like theology has to give, right? To these types of conversations, mainly because right, like this could easily be like an Afro-pessimistic kind of discourse, right, or dialogue, you know, that just kind of looks at like this is it, the social death all over, And the term is not one that is going to provide any type of life for us. But I think the theological term is one that gives it, that provides us a level of hope,
right,
and then creativity to move, right, and to reorganize and reconstitute ourselves, right, with these, with, in the formation of new systems that can be seen in this way.
Right. So you conclude the work by considering what the spirituality of revolt might look like in 2030. So why is it important? So why is it important to end the work in this way, through like this, like low-key, like mini case study, or just like more of a praxis ending in that way?
Right. Now, I saw it. It's funny. Like, I was talking to a buddy of mine a couple of weeks back, and it's like the theories, well, like without narrative, like theories sometimes just fall, like just caves in on itself.
Right.
And so, like, because we don't have a pure example of this yet, not to say that there's anything ever that's pure, right? Since we don't have, like, a living example of this, we had to create a narrative of it. And so the narrative becomes a way for us to imagine what this looks like in environments, right, where Black folks are in the future in power and have the ability to exert agency over over their own lives, and even influence policy and the world around them in a way that can be clandestine, in a way, right, that can be overt, right, but in a way that just seems normal. And so, no, I think the practical piece, right, is just to, like, all right, so we've talked all of this trash, I've used a lot of big words, right?
Right. So how's it applicable?
And so, yeah, but like, what does it do? Like, how can it actually help? I can actually, help folks materialize these liberating realities that you talked about, right? So this is where you have the character waking up in like a fully immersed, fully technologically immersed environment, who's engaging in their spiritual practice, who is engaging in subversive business practices, subversive global economic practices, right? And who is also potentially a part of like a whole, like secret family type stuff, right? And so, this person is making moves in a way that is meant to, again, kind of shift, the scale, or tip the scale, right, as the Roots would say.
Right. So in conclusion, thank you so much. What do you hope will be the scholarly and also greater like revolutionary contributions of Black transhuman liberation theology?
You're asking me very big questions, Nicole. This is where I love it. I love it. this is revolutionary impact. I think if I'm clear or just honest about this, I think that this can be a framework, right, to perceive the world through, right? At the very least, if folks are willing to shed their humanity, right, and begin to see their bodies as this kind of infinitely this bed for infinite potential, so to speak, right? Then the willingness to move into spaces that have not historically been for them. Right, because I think also this also has something to touch on in terms of the aversion to technological industries that Black folks have, like presently, right? And so while Black folks may have some of the latest tech, right, in terms of like consumer level, right, Black folks are beginning, right, to more regularly move into technological roles or technological spaces. And I think as a strategy, I think this could be potentially kind of used to rethink what it means to be in kind of quote unquote the tech industry, right? Or even more so, right, just to look at what it means to be in charge of the state of the art. And to be the ones in the vanguard of what is state of the art, right? And so I think one could argue that Black folks are state of the art in terms of culture, right? But then what does it mean to be state of the art in terms of like innovation as it pertains to like technology, right? Like Internet of Things, general artificial intelligence that we're still working towards, like quantum supremacy, right? Genetic engineering, like these specific fields. What does it mean for Black folks to be at the bleeding edges of these industries, leading these teams, and to not be like the diversity and inclusion people, right? Like it's
right.
Like that's not the role. Like that this still becomes like the equity question, like the equity, like how do you make this with me in mind?
Right.
Well, so the question becomes, nah, I'm gonna make this and I'm gonna have and I know what it's like to not have be included, and so I can then make this either specifically for me, right? Or I can make this knowing what it means to have other people in mind, right? And so kind of in like in Enrique Dussel, right? Like being able to philosophize and then do work at the from the perspective of the margins. Like you have a better idea because you see you see what other people don't see. Right?
Mm-hmm. You're expert, right?
And it's just that like a framework, right, that pushes the bounds into what it means to be a progenitor in these spaces.
Well, thank you so much for joining me this morning. It's been a pleasure and so enlightening to read this work and to converse with you. So thank you again, Dr. Butler.
No, it's been a pleasure, Nicole. Your questions, like, you're making me think and really draw from the well. And so I really appreciate it.